Literary hyperlinks. Focus on the text. Ulysses. Published in 1922, Ulysses represents a high point of modernism. In Joyce's masterpiece, not much happens in terms of actual events. It basically tells the story of a day in the life of advertising salesman Leopold Bloom, who gets up, walks around Dublin, and meets various people along the way, including the young writer Stephen Dedalus, with whom he visits a brother and gets drunk, before finally going home and laying down beside his wife Molly. Most wanderings, however, are made to reproduce, imitate, and occasionally parody the epic travels of Ulysses, the Latin name given to Odysseus, in Homer's Odyssey. Bloom is not the only character in the book who is based on a Homeric model. Below is a basic scheme of correspondence between the principal characters of the two texts. The modern anti-hero. The book's parallelism with the Odyssey extends to its structure. The 18 episodes which comprise the novel are modelled on equivalent episodes in Homer's text. But in Ulysses, these usually become parodic, or at least are treated with comic circumspection. Joyce shows how the problems, conflicts, triumphs, and tragedies of the classical world are the same problems faced by modern men. The difference is that modern man is imperfect, is not a hero, and he cannot rely on the kindness of the gods to help him through his struggles. However, this very ordinariness of Joyce's characters contains within it a vet and vitality which no classical hero possesses. The Odyssey. Odysseus and Ulysses, the Greek soldier and hero, whose ship, returning from the Trojan Wars, is blown off course. He finds himself delayed by a series of bizarre and sometimes perilous events and encounters, which he survives by using all its wits, and manages, finally, to return to his home of Ithaca. Telemachus, the son of Ulysses awaiting his father's return, is forced to share his home with his mother's suitors, who treat him badly and deny him his rights. Seeking news of his father, he turns to the wise King Nestor, who gives him good advice. Penelope, the wife of Ulysses, who faithfully awaits her husband's return, avoiding the advances of her suitors, by busying herself with weaving a work which she never finishes, since at night she secretly unweaves which is woven during the night. Ulysses. Leopold Bloom, a middle-aged Jewish advertising canvasser, who goes out one morning, leaving his wife asleep in bed, wanders around Dublin on a series of inconclusive errands, during which he meets the young writer Stephen Dedalus. Stephen Dedalus, an indigent and pretentious young writer, whose companions evict him from the temporary home they have made in a coastal tower, forced to wander the streets of Dublin in search of a new home and a substitute father, Stephen meets Bloom, who offers to take him into his home. Molly Bloom, the wife of Leopold. Molly is a semi-professional singer who has had several lovers. While Bloom is out on his wanderings, her latest lover, the theatrical agent Blazes Boylan, comes to visit her. An Odyssey in Consciousness. Although the plot of Ulysses is very much like a map on which we follow Leopold Bloom's wanderings, the various Odysseys of Bloom, Stephen and Molly are equally voyages through the internal sea of their own consciousnesses, which we are invited to listen to. The experience is, as the writer and critic David Lodge says, rather like wearing earphones plugged into someone's brain and monitoring an endless tape recording of the subject's impressions, reflections, questions, memories and fantasies as they are triggered either by physical sensation or the association of ideas. This interior monologue attempts to simulate the workings of the consciousness in several ways. Firstly, it employs incomplete sentences. Then there is interrupted syntax, slips of the tongue, sudden changes of tense to indicate the intermingling of past, present and anticipated future events. Thoughts are connected by free association. No one idea is dominant, and new information constantly interferes with thoughts which are being elaborated. All of these devices help to produce an increased sense of realism. Joyce does not select material on aesthetic grounds. He preserves all the rubbish that passes through our minds. Yet, at the same time, as Joyce says, Ulysses is structured according to a very precise symbolic system. An encyclopedic novel. T.S. Eliot didn't consider Ulysses so much a novel as a modern epic. For him, it took a major step towards making the modern world possible for art. He regarded as extraordinary the way it attempts to bridge the divide between the modern and the classical worlds. Indeed, Ulysses is full of quotations from and references to not only Homer, but also Virgil, Dante, Shakespeare, Vico, Aquinas, in fact, practically, the whole history of Western literature. Apart from interior monologue, it employs practically every single rhetorical technique and style in English, from Latin liturgy and Anglo-Saxon poetry to the language of advertising slogans and popular magazines. In this sense, it's also an encyclopedic novel. In the tradition of Sterne and Rabelais, when it came out, the book was considered by its first readers immoral, incoherent, chaotic, obscure, impossible to read. Some conservative critics even compared it to a telephone directory, which became one of Joyce's favorite nicknames for it. All this means that the book can be read in many ways, not just from beginning to end. Rather than understand and interpret in a traditional way, the reader is invited to play parts of the text like a game or like a piece of music, and the number of ways it can be played is infinite. Hotly in comparative literature, John Cage and The Wake of Joyce. James Joyce's final novel, The Gargantuan Finnegan's Wake, is regarded by many critics as the most ambitious experimental literary work ever written. A work whose intent, Joyce wrote famously, was to keep literary critics occupied for the next 400 years. The novel was originally known simply as a work in progress, and the text itself is perhaps best appreciated not in terms of its overall structure, relatively few people have actually read it from beginning to end, but as an experimental reading in progress, an open work which announces and afterwards, one of the meanings of Wake, in which the reader has the freedom to decide what to do with it. In this sense, Finnegan's Wake, with its openness, polylinguistic word games, and fragmented syntax, is close in spirit to the musical theories of American composer John Cage, who regarded music first and foremost as a sonic process. Indeed, Cage employed elements of Joyce's text in a number of his compositions. Moreover, he generated several written texts from the novel which he called Writing for the First, Second Time Through Finnegan's Wake. To do this, he used a technique called mesostics, a method which comes from Greek mesostikon, composed by mesos, middle, and stikos, verse, in which one chooses a word, in Cage's case the name James Joyce, and then identifies words, in each line in the middle of the page, which sequentially contain the letters of the words chosen. As Cage writes, a mesostic is a road down the middle.